Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli. He represents the 129th District, which includes several parts of the city of Syracuse, as well as the towns of Geddes and Van Buren, and part of the village of Baldwinsville. Assemblyman Magnarelli, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with a question about the 2017 legislative session. It has been criticized for not getting a lot done, especially regarding reform of the political process and more specifically, ethics. How would you assess the legislature's effectiveness this year?
I thought the legislature did a fine job this year. And, as far as the ethics question is concerned, we have passed ethics reform. I think I'm just giving this by an estimate, but I think for the last 10 years we've passed ethics legislation. There are certain pieces that were not addressed this year, but I wouldn't call the whole legislative session a failure because one little segment of what certain people wanted wasn't done. In fact, we did a ton of things, especially most of which got done by April 1st. In the budget, we put a lot of money into our water infrastructure, $3.5 billion being put in various ways. Transportation infrastructure this year, $300 million total investment. The Environmental Protection Fund has never had this kind of money, $300 million put in the budget this year. I'm very proud to say that the upstate caucus in the assembly, the Democratic Assembly, put $2 million for refugee aid when the federal government backed out.
And let me jump in on that because you mentioned
the upstate. About $500,000 of that going to Interfaith Works and Catholic Charities. So, when I look at the things that have been done in this legislative session, I don't back off at all. I think we did a fine job and the people should be proud of the legislature this time around. And we did it relatively on time.
Well, let me follow up on that upstate connection.
By the way, one
that
more
you made.
Thing.
Yeah, sure.
You got Uber.
Can't wait. I guess I'm a traditionalist. I'm still taking cabs, but anyway. On the upstate connection, what do you think was the most important actions that the legislature took that relate specifically to central New York? You mentioned the money for the refugees. What are some of the other things that you think are most relevant here?
I think taking care of our water infrastructure, taking care of our transportation infrastructure, I think those are huge things for upstate New York. The downstate or New York City area looks at it in a much different way. I mean, they're having a lot of problems down there with the transit system, mm-hmm. okay? But for us, it's getting around in upstate New York is miles and miles and miles of infrastructure, thousands and thousands of bridges. Our cities with crumbling infrastructure, as Syracuse is the same as Utica, Schenectady, Rochester, Buffalo. I mean, we all have those problems. So I think jump-starting monies into those areas, I think, was huge. So I feel we did a relatively good job. People will say we didn't put in enough here or we didn't put in enough there. It's going to take too long to get these things started. Yes, but it's a start. And so I feel that those things were major, and it took a lot of upstate colleagues, not only in the Assembly but also in the Senate, to push forward on some of those things that have been neglected for a long period of time.
Now, you also mentioned when you were ticking off some of those things that they were part of the budget, and I wanted to ask you a question about that. Much of the notable new legislation for this year was wrapped into the state budget. And I'm thinking of the college tuition program, which we haven't talked about. I want to come back to that later as an example of that. But that practice of putting all those things in the budget has been criticized for compressing and short-circuiting deliberation on important specific issues and also leading to some strong-arming on passage because so many things are wrapped up in this one particular bill. Is that something that that we should be concerned about that practice? Is that growing in your view? Does it create problems for the deliberation of over these different issues?
I do believe it is growing, okay, and I would be concerned about it. It's not something that I in particular or I think the majority of my colleagues like happening. Doing policy at the same time you're trying to pass a financial framework or budget for the state, I don't think is good policy. And everything you just mentioned is the wrong way to do it, not the right way to do it. But it is what it is. The reason we have it this way is because of Silver versus Pataki, a state case that came down and basically said that, if we didn't like something in the legislature that the governor put in, we can either just say no or we can't change it. We can't – if he puts policy in, we can't take it out. So this has really driven what's been going on since that case.
And it's a tactic then that the governor will use in order to have a stronger negotiating.
Right. Yeah. And Pataki used it a little bit. Following that, the next two Democratic governors used it a little bit. Finally, Patterson really kind of brought the legislature to its knees. He basically said, look it. I tell you what I'm going to do. You don't pass this budget. I'm going to give you an extender in a week so that you can keep government going. It's going to have everything in it again. And so now all you get to do is say no. And so that's where we're left. I think Governor Cuomo has taken advantage of this. I'm not criticizing him for it. I'm just saying he's using what the law says he has at this point in time. Now, having said all these bad things about what we're doing, I got to give him credit. We are doing. We may not like it all. We may have to swallow hard on some of the things that we do, you know, and I'm sure that the Republicans on the other side of the aisle have to swallow hard in the Senate to make these things happen. The one thing that you can't argue with is we are doing things and we are moving and we are relatively on time. Those things weren't happening before this. So there's good and there's bad. There's some trade-off here.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli from the Syracuse area. I want to come back to the Excelsior program for tuition assistance at public colleges and universities. Mm-hmm. Again, another piece that was wrapped into the budget. And that program basically covers tuition at state institutions after other financial aid has been applied. And it's for students currently from families with incomes up to $100,000 and who meet other requirements in their studies. And that cap is going to be raised in the coming years. Now, this was touted by the governor as helping working and middle class students. And the way it's structured does seem geared more toward the middle class. I have a couple questions about it. First, why shouldn't such a program also cover room and board and books and other fees? I mean, those are no different from tuition in terms of a student or a family's ability to attend college. So why the limitation there?
To be honest with you, there is no reason for it except money. How much money are you going to spend on a given program? I can't remember exactly how much this is going to cost. I think the governor said something like $175 million, but don't quote me on that.
That's the ballpark that I remember reading,
okay,
too. Somewhere in the $100 million mark.
Right. Yeah. Now, if you added room and board on top of that, you're definitely going to double that number, without a doubt, or more. And people have even said that the $175 million is a real low ball idea of what this is going to cost. So I think what you have to ask yourself is not only do we want to do it and do we think this is a good idea policy-wise, but on the second part of it is where are we going to get the money to afford it? Are we going to raise taxes to do this? Are we going to cut other programs to do this? So, I mean, it's like anything else. How much can the state afford to do? I think that for certain income levels, I think the poor, as a matter of fact, those that really find themselves with no wherewithal to go to college, I think this would be a good idea. And to help them, get a college education in this day and age. However, these are things that I'd have to look at and flesh out a little bit more.
And there's another criticism that this program has received I wanted to ask you about. It's received some flack from private colleges mm-hmm. and universities. The argument is basically that this program kind of unfairly works against them in the playing field of attracting students and somehow undermines private colleges and universities. And you being a graduate, both undergraduate and your graduate degree from a private university, curious to hear your reaction to that.
I listened to it and I understand what they're saying. And I believe that some of the colleges are going to see a little diminishment of the amount of people that are going to be applying to those schools. I think that's true, at least in the short term, okay? But I also – and I may be wrong on this, but I believe that SUNY was free at one point in time. And these schools started – they were there when SUNY started, and it was free. So the idea that they can't compete with that institution to me is false. And I think that private institutions have their own cultures, traditions, academic standings. There's reasons why a family, a student would choose one school over another. I think that will remain. There may be some change in enrollments. There may be some retracting, so to speak, as far as some of the schools are concerned. But I don't know if that's a bad thing when you think of making sure that our students have the ability to go to college. I think that's the number one priority. And I think the middle class deserved this bill. I'm going to say something that might get the people at Syracuse very mad at me, and I love Syracuse. I bleed orange, okay? but the bottom line is, and I'm not talking about Syracuse here, okay? But there's been an escalation in tuition that is, to me, unreasonable. Mm. It doesn't make any sense. It's way higher than inflation and every other category that you can think of. And
except for medical care, perhaps.
Well,
that's
except
another
for,
topic.
Maybe
but go
okay,
ahead.
But close though, yeah. Very close to medical care. It's extreme, and the middle class just hasn't been making more money. So something had to give. I'm not. It's great to build new buildings. It's great to have dorms that I would like to live in because of all of the accoutrement that go with them. But, the old dorm room with the cinder block walls is a thing of the past. And now there's got to be gyms and fitness, fitness centers and Starbucks and I don't know. I'm just talking like an old guy now. Some of this stuff just seems to be getting out of the grasp of the middle class. And so something had to be done. And this is kind of like a redirection, I think.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli, who represents the 129th District, which includes parts of Syracuse and its outlying areas. I want to ask you a question about something that was in the news recently. Sheldon Silver, the former Assembly Speaker who had been convicted of corruption, he had his conviction overturned due to the instructions that the judge gave the jury. That was the legal grounds for this. How should the public make sense of this? In particular, what I'm thinking is this in combination with the successful appeal by former Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno, I can understand how it might seem to most citizens that the system is hopeless when it comes to ethics, that there's no justice there. How do we make sense of this?
Well, first of all, I want to make a distinction, okay? There's a distinction between being criminal and something that might be unethical. Okay. Now, if you commit a criminal act, that's unethical as well, okay? But there are certain things that we shouldn't be doing as public officials, even though they may be legal. They may be legal. I think that the public should be a little bit frustrated with what's going on. But on the other hand, I ask the public to allow the legal system to take its course. There's one thing to be convicted of a crime and to be sent to prison. And then there's another thing to just be an unethical government employee or elected official. We have to let our legal system take care of that and believe in that. That doesn't mean that I condone anything that I read in the complaint against Shelley Silver. As far as I'm concerned, not only was I frustrated, but I was just downhearted. I just was, you know, I just couldn't believe what I was reading in many instances. And so, you know, the only thing I can tell people to take away from this is stay on top of things. Keep up on what's going on. Make sure you know who you're voting for. Not only what they stand for on the issues, but who are they? And, you know, I've got to say, though, you know, knowing Sheldon Silver personally, I just didn't believe that he would have done some of the things that were in that complaint. So whether they're illegal or not illegal, you know, if I had known what was going on, I don't think I ever would have voted for him to be Speaker of the Assembly. And I think there's many of my colleagues who probably would feel the same in that respect.
If you just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli. I want to turn to more local politics now. What did you make of the City Democratic Committee choosing Joe Nicoletti to get the committee's endorsement for city mayor?
I thought it is what it is, I guess. You know, he got enough of the committee members to vote for him. You know, Joe is one of those fellas that, you know, people make fun of being around for so long. But on the other hand, he is someone who knows how to get things done. He knows local politics, state politics. He is familiar with all of the players. I think he gets along well with them. So, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And I think many people looked at it in the long run and said, you know, maybe we're at a point in time where Joe is the guy that we should have leading the city.
So let me ask you a more specific question about this. And I'm asking it because I have heard this from several people when I've talked to them about this outcome who are kind of political elites, or, you know, they've got their ear to the ground, or they're part of this in some way. So I've heard that Nicoletti was the Magnarelli Democrats person, and Andrew Maxwell, who finished very close to Nicoletti but did not get the nod, and then has dropped out of the race, decided not to primary, was the mayor's candidate. Wow. And that there was this sort of, you know, struggle between those two camps, so to speak, in the local Democratic Party. Is that correct or
no? Let's take this in steps, okay? All right. First of all, there was no controversy between my camp. I don't think there is one, okay? But my people and the mayor's people. Second thing. Andy Maxwell, I think, had his first job in my office. I think very highly of him. I went to lunch two or three times with him before he announced. I gave him my opinion. He didn't take it. But I wished him well. That is a young man who is going to do great things. He's got a great head on his shoulders. He has great ideas. In my estimation, and I know if he's listening to this, he's not going to like to hear it, but I told him directly, I just didn't think it was his time. Mm-hmm. I thought Joe had more of the connections, more of the relationships that would do the city better. I like it that the committee picked Joe Nicoletti. I was not on the phone for anybody. As a matter of fact, this all happened around a very tough time in my life. So I was not involved in that. So the bottom line of all of this is I'm not unhappy with the outcome of the designation. I think Andy Maxwell is going to have a great career in front of him and is going to do great things and will have my support in doing so. So it bodes well for the Democratic Party going forward, the way I look at it from a local standpoint.
And we've just got a couple minutes left, but another question on the mayor's race in terms of what it means for the city of Syracuse. All of the candidates in this race, I think, have said in one way or another that this election is a crucial one for the future of the city, that it's a sort of a turning point election. What do you see at stake for the city in this particular election for mayor?
It is, they're all crucial elections. I got news for you. And people should understand that. Every time you go to the polls, it's a crucial election. You're electing the people that are going to take care of your interests for the next 2 years, 4 years, whatever it's going to be. In this situation, though, I think it's important that relationships are mended between the local governments, number one, the city of Syracuse, the county of Onondaga, and also with our state government. It is crucial for the city of Syracuse to rebuild those relationships. And so I see this election from that standpoint as being very crucial.
And just very quickly, if we could just do just a sentence, where are you on I-81? It's changing topics.
Well, I've asked the DOT to take a look again at a depressed highway or a tunnel solution. Again, trying to come to consensus with everybody in central New York, those that live in the city, those that live out of the city. If you did something like that, you could have a boulevard on top of it. We can connect downtown with the university area and at the same time try to get people in and out of the city the way they've become accustomed to it.
That was Bill Magnarelli. Assemblyman, thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. Continuing our conversation with Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli, I wanted to get into the primary and the mayor's race a little bit more than we had a chance to in our conversation. Do you think that this primary that is going to come up, there are a lot of different candidates in it, and they have different, I think, bases in the city that they might draw on, thinking of Juanita Perez Williams, for example. So it has the potential, I think, to get somewhat bruising. And I'm wondering whether, as a Democrat, you think that if that happens, it could really hurt the eventual nominee and to allow another candidate, and I'm thinking in particular here perhaps of Ben Walsh, who might draw on this very successfully, to take advantage of that conflict. And this goes back a ways, and you will remember this, of course, but, a version of what happened when I think it was Joe Nicoletti and Fahey had a very bruising primary a couple decades ago, and that I think helped the Republican in the end, Bernardi, to win. So what's your sense of that?
Well, I think it's all possible, just the way you said it. I mean, if it gets I think all primaries end up somewhat bruising, okay? And there are hurt feelings, and there are segments of the party that will be upset. Hopefully that doesn't get too out of hand. I also believe that Mr. Walsh, Ben, will try to take advantage of that as he runs. But he's also got a problem on his side, so to speak, in the Republicans, having put up a Republican candidate. That's going to siphon off some of the people that he normally would have had. So, and I have heard, and I'm, you know, it's all hearsay here, that they're really upset, and they want the Republican candidate. So, more power to them. The bottom line here, though, is that I do believe that so long as the Democratic primary is not one that is so close that you could barely find a winner, I think that the numbers are just going to be too much for Ben to overtake. And I think that the Democratic Party will be successful. I do remember the Roy Bernardi election, and Roy has since then become a good friend and someone I can talk to. I could talk to him when he was mayor. And I think those are the types of things that we need to have again, where we can talk to the mayor. The mayor can talk to all other parts of our governments, the county executive, the governor, and, you know, try to bring people back together.
Yeah, you had mentioned that in our earlier conversation, when you were characterizing how important this election was, the need to repair those relationships. So right. I think you've already answered this, but I want to ask it just directly. Do you see then that the conflict between the mayor's office and some of the other offices at the regional and the state level has hurt the city in some specific ways?
Well, you know, I think the mayor Minor has done a very good job keeping our heads above water in this day and age. For any city of this size, is a really tough task, and she has done that, and she's been able to do it. She's also made her mark in a number of different areas too, in terms of the environment, in terms of infrastructure, and pushing for those things, all to her credit. The one thing that I think that I would have liked better was a better relationship with our state government, and a better relationship to have continued with the county government, because it started off great. So, you know, I'm not privy to exactly what happened in all of those circumstances, but the one thing I do believe is that if those relationships had stayed the way they were on day one, I think we would have been better off. And I don't think Mayor Minor would say anything different. Mm-hmm. You know, if those relationships could have been maintained, I'm not saying who's right, who's wrong. I'm just saying if you could have maintained those relationships, I think we would have done a little bit better.
And then finally, back to the mayor's race. And you had talked in our conversation about what you saw as the benefits and the skills that Joe Nicoletti as a nominee would bring to the mayor's office, in terms of that, you know, his ability to get along with people, all the contacts that he has, the experience, the relationships. I wanted to turn that around, though, and think about kind of where the country is right now and its political attitudes. It does seem like we're in a time where many voters want their elected officials to be agents of change, or they want the candidates at least to be able to claim that they are agents of change and to challenge established systems. But I mean, that was part of Barack Obama's appeal in 2008. Yeah. Certainly part of Donald Trump's appeal. It was part of, you know, the appeals of several governors that have run in recent years here in the state. So you know, you get Joe Nicoletti. It just seems hard for him to be able to put himself in that mold. Do you see that might become problematic in the general election if that's the Democratic banner there?
Well, you know, I don't know how to answer that all at once. That's a big question. Agents of change. But the thing is, the proof is in what you do, not what you say. And, you know, I have to laugh a little bit about what's happening in Washington right now, because they're getting nothing done. Absolutely zero. So what change is happening? you know, the things that I feel in local government are necessary right now is that the city of Syracuse cannot maintain itself, for the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years without something happening within our local governments and something happening on the state level. Without additional help, the city of Syracuse will be under a control board or bankrupt, whichever one you prefer. There's no question about that. And I think anybody who's running who doesn't see that is, you know, they've got their head in the sand. Mm. So, I mean, the bottom line is we need someone, I believe, who's going to be able to get along with people and get the kind of help we need for this area. And I don't like talking about helping Syracuse. What I'm talking about is helping Central New York. This is not just a Syracuse problem. As the city goes, so will everything else. When I ran for county executive, that's what we were talking about. Our county executive now talks about mm-hmm. the same thing. Mm-hmm. So Joni and I kind of see this in the same way. We have to build a strong Syracuse for a strong Onondaga County and a strong Central New York. That can be done. See, I don't believe that that's impossible. I believe you can do that with the proper relationships between the local governments and also with the state government. But we've all got to be on the same page. Joe seems to have the qualities to do that. I'm not saying Ben Walsh doesn't. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Andy Maxwell didn't. I'm just saying that Joe has not only that, but the experience and the personal relationships with people right now that I think could help Syracuse.
Thanks again, Assemblyman.
Okay. You're welcome.